Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you in alignment with the cosmos? Sometimes maybe you think you are and sometimes you aren't. But I don't know that there's a choice. I think we have to be. Maybe we are the cosmos. We're going to find out, because there's an incredible book that I read called The Cosmic Hologram, Information at the Center of Creation, written by an author who's been on the show before, and she's a cosmologist and has a degree in physics and a doctorate in archaeology. She's been around, and this book is really amazing. It's so rich, The Cosmic Hologram. And so I'm so glad to be interviewing Jude Caravan. Jude, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. It's lovely to be with you all.
Well, I'm so glad that we could do this, because your book is one of the more profound books I've ever read. You certainly put a lot into it. Every page, every sentence is so rich with information and awareness. It's really incredible. And so there's a lot for us to talk about. I mean, I could talk about the book, but let's talk about what's in the book. So you're amazing that you hold these very, very powerful scientific truths that you write about. And I think people who are really interested in the science of cosmology and understanding the nature of the universe will get so much out of what you have to say about it, because you talk on so many different levels, and it's really wonderful to read the science and understand what we know about the universe in a much more holistic way. So it's hard to even know where to start, because I feel very entropic.
And that's a lovely way to feel.
Well, that means there needs to be purpose here.
Indeed.
And you're right. And so actually, we could start that way, really talking about what a lot of people call the Big Bang and you call the Big Breath. And the universe started, and it should have just fallen apart right away because of entropy. Mm-hmm. And how come it didn't?
Well, if you'd like me to begin to answer that, we've misunderstood the nature of entropy for a long time. When I guess you and I were both at school, entropy was always seen as about order and disorder. And an entropy, any parent will know about entropy. Your tired kid's room in the morning and it's very ordered, and you come back in the evening and it's incredibly disordered. That's entropy, moving from order to disorder inevitably. And in physics, for a long time, cosmologists have understood that our universe began in an incredibly low state of entropy in a very, very, very ordered way. Essentially with the minimum amount of information in it to allow it to exist.
And right, so there can only be so much disorder when there's not enough order yet.
Well,
there wasn't enough
that
was formed.
Well, that's right. But the thing is with entropy is, as it's always been seen, any system will always go from its lowest level of order to its most ordered to its most disordered, like a kid's bedroom. It begins in order, it will always move to more disorder. You can think of it a different way. If you open a pack of cards, for example, and take the cellophane wrapping off, they're beautifully ordered. You throw them up in the air and they'll never fall in that ordered way. They'll always fall in a more disordered way. And however many times you repeat that, you throw them up and let them land and collect them, they'll become more and more disordered in that sense. And that's that's pretty much been the understanding from physics of what order, disorder, entropy has meant. And that goes back to the studies in the mid-19th century of behavior of gases and realizing that, that's the way gases behave. That's the way any closed system behaves. And actually, what it allows you to do is it enables you to, look at the flow of time itself. Because if you shoot a video of somebody knocking, say, a cup of tea off a table, and I'm really good at that, by the way. I knock lots of cups of tea over. What you see when you run the video, when you run it one way, it makes sense. The cup of tea falls over, the tea's spilt. If you run the video back, you know it's an artificial rollback because spilt cups of tea never reassemble themselves into unspilt cups of tea. So that's been the sense of entropy for a long time in physics. And our universe, because it began in a very high level of order, has ostensibly, entropically, that entropy has been increasing ever since. And that has been seen as the flow of time, the arrow of time. But more recently, not just by this particular individual, but many other theorists have been seeing something different about a deeper understanding of what entropy is about. And in the 1950s, an IBM engineer called Claude Shannon wanted to figure out essentially what the informational content of a system is, because he was trying to squirt information down cables with telephones. So he needed to know what the informational entropy of a system is. And what he found is that the informational content of a system is exactly the same equation that had been discovered over a century before him as representing the level of order, disorder in a system.
So, right, that makes sense. The whole idea is that entropy actually allows you to understand the information present, because
exactly.
That's what's becoming disordered. And so that allows you to know the unfolding, which actually allows us to really experience the scope of the universe.
Exactly that. Essentially, the first law of thermodynamics, which is about all about energy being conserved, which, of course, with quantum theory, we know energy is equivalent to matter, relativity, energy equivalent to matter. So we know that for our universe, that all of the energy matter that's ever been there at the moment of that big breath, which wasn't a bang, it was a beautifully, exquisitely ordered out-breath of space and time, that has been conserved ever since. But you're absolutely right. That enabled our universe to exist, but it could never have evolved, because to evolve, you need to experience and explore and embody more and more information. So when Claude Shannon restated entropy as the informational content of a system, it enabled us to then understand that actually what we had at the first moment of the Big Breath, at that very lowest level of informational entropy, was like a newborn baby. And because of time flowing and space expanding, which of course we know it does now, that expansion of space and that flow of time, that inevitable increase in informational entropy, as you say, has enabled ever more complexity to evolve within our universe. So the first law of thermodynamics as a law of information enables our universe to exist, but it's crucially this second law, this entropic law, now restated as informational entropy, as space-time expressed as space-time, that enables it to evolve and enables us to be here.
Now, another thing is that if we look at this entropy as creating disorder, then the universe also can't exist. So there's another factor involved here. And that has to do with, I guess, purpose. Some
Absolutely.
Cosmic purpose to keep on maybe using entropy and the information from it to refine itself.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
I think we need to get away from this whole usage of the terms order and disorder and actually really begin to understand that when we expand the second law of thermodynamics, when we expand to understand the nature of entropy at this more profound informational level, it is all about evolution. It's all about the evolution of complexity to ever more self-aware, embodied consciousness. And for me, that is the meaning and the purpose, because everything was there from the get-go of that first moment 13.8 billion years ago that our universe needed to exist and evolve into ever greater levels of embodied consciousness. And we now know, as you say, you know, and this is in the book, that cosmologists, everything's pointing to our universe being a finite and unified entity, that, you know, within space-time, the speed of light means there is a flow of time and there is a causality that can't be violated. And yet our entire universe is what's called non-locally connected. So it knows itself as an intelligent being whilst within its space-time construction, you know, it and we as microcosmic co-creators of its innate purpose and meaning and intelligence can experience and evolve ourselves and learn and have joy in its abundance and, you know, its beauty.
And you, there's so many pages and paragraphs and sentences in the book that are so brilliant and allowed me to really hold this in such a beautiful way. And what you were just talking about the universe being a non-locally entangled and having superposition states that collapse in order to create a specific realization that we hold of an entropic and localized reality. So,
yeah.
So this is, you know, when I read that, I went, oh my gosh, this is so cool that you really, you know, to understand that the only way we can realize it is when this non-local, you know, quantum universe collapses into a realization of a local realization of reality that we work with and we feel, you know, separate in, but it's really part of the way that the universe expresses itself, and all we are really is an expression of the intelligence of the universe in our unique ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this word collapse, again, physicists, you know, we are, the physicists themselves and us generally, I think, are heading into new language territory. And, you know, when it says collapse, when they say collapse, and that's been used for 80 years, and the whole idea is, as you know, Peter, is that the possibilities that are superimposed in quantum states, when something is observed or measured in a laboratory, that then realizes a single state.
You can call that a collapse. That it collapses.
And it's a terrible word because it suggests that we co-create realities. It's not a collapse. It's a co-creation.
Right. I know. I understand. But I was being able to see it as the collapse as more of a condensation of.
Realization. I like that. I like condensation.
Okay,
and of course, you know, the other thing, though, that I think people misunderstand sometimes when we do talk about, you know, co-creating our realities, there is this sense that somehow on this individuated consciousness we call a human being, that somehow, you know, a single human being can co-create our universe. For me, that's something, having had these experiences since I was 4 years old and walking between worlds, and I was 65 on St. Paddy's Day, so I've been doing it a while, is not that. Is that, you know, our entire universe is a universal in its entirety, and so we are now holographically realized. So we are its microcosmic, co-realities. Having spoken with many, many different and communicated with many, many different realms of existence and being and wisdom, you know, I wouldn't ever presume to sort of say to somebody, well, you know, you co-create the universe in totality. You know, if humans weren't here, the universe soul would continue to exist and evolve as a unified entity. And there would be many, many others, in my view, self-aware realizations of that who would be doing what we're doing. I think we're incredibly fortunate and purposeful and meaningful to have this glorious privilege of doing it, but to see ourselves as microcosmic co-creators of its macrocosmic intelligence rather than somehow it's all us.
I don't know why this... we've only been on for 15 minutes and the music is going. So there must be some mistake on the part of the engineer here to get that going. We'll keep talking, though. Because, so what it is that we are in patterns. Everything is part of holographic patterning. And all we are is each of us is an expression of the holographic pattern. And we think, our egos have to think that we're separate from that. And that's where it creates all kinds of our own disturbances. But that's our egos. Because to me, I don't believe that we have free will. I don't believe that our minds can plan our thoughts and that we think in conscious, strategic ways. We respond to our minds and follow them. And so our minds are part of this patterning, each in our unique personality, the mechanics that we're born to be that, you know, it's called that spark of creation that is unique for us. And the more that we can identify with being part of the weave of all of life and that we're just expressing it through ourselves, I think it's easier to manage life that way.
I agree, actually, and that's the conclusion that I've come to over many years, that when we're in our persona, when we're in our egos, you know, free will is something that is so, so, so important for us to perceive about ourselves. But when we can expand our awareness, as you're saying, Peter, beyond that very limited personal perspective, we realize that free will takes on a whole new definition, in a sense. And for me, it's actually being a clear conduit of that higher purpose that's partly me because I'm still a unique representation. I am a co-creator, a microcosmic co-creator of realities. You know, our thoughts, our beliefs, as Bruce Lipton, my friend Bruce Lipton says, you know, our beliefs affect our behaviors, whether they're real or partial or illusory or whatever, which is where our whole duality-based illusory perspective of separation has brought us, in a sense, to the edge of catastrophe. Because, you know, when we feel separate, we behave as though we're separate. When we believe that somehow, you know, that separation means we need to fear other people or other things or whatever, we behave in those fear-based responses. And so what's so amazing and wonderful and exciting for me is that, and what I hope this book is able to be in service to, is finally, you know, a scientifically based proof that mind is matter and consciousness isn't what we have, it's what we and the whole world are, literally. And so in that sense, for the first time ever, we've had the full array of scientifically based evidence that's partnered, that's finally reconciled with universal spiritual experience to say, no, duality is illusory. Everything is unity, reality. But, this is the beauty, that we can celebrate and explore our uniqueness, our unique microcosmic expression of our universe soul within the oneness of that unity. It's not that somehow everything becomes a grey goo. On the contrary, it's as though somebody switched on a light and we can actually see the incredible rainbow colors of universal realities really for the first time.
Right. It's a very advanced state of consciousness to be awake, just to be awake. And we're uniquely awake representing the larger whole, and so we can honor that. The blessing of our unique awakeness is wonderful. And then also to see us enfolded in the patterns that we're born to. Even our unique beliefs, we're born to own them. As we know, and you know, look at our families and how many different beliefs each person has, and understand how natural it is for them to own those beliefs, because that's their unique pattern that they're born to. And
be authentic with that, but also perhaps, you know, I talk about us not falling back into fear, but leaping into love, because when we honor and appreciate and respect each and every expression of our universe soul's intelligence, instead of fear, we can come to a sense of compassion and appreciate difference, not difference that hurts, because hurt and pain comes from fear, but difference based on love and difference based on appreciation and difference based on that celebration of diversity within that oneness.
Right, but a lot of, in your book, you talk about these universal patterns and all about the research has gone into behavior of people and the way our population flows that is always in patterns. There are fractal patterns for everything. There's nothing out of order. And even the world as we see it today looks so disordered and messed up. And yet it's really been patterned to be that way. And it needs to be that way. And this is a time that it's been predicted for us to have to go through this time in order to find new refinements to build a better world and better universe. So, you know, so if we can appreciate that. Yes.
It's funny, you know, I absolutely agree with you. I was just, when you were saying that, I was just thinking of the work that Benoit Mandelbrot did. And Mandelbrot was the researcher that discovered these underlying patterns of fragmented dimensions he called fractals. And since his realization of those in the early days of computers, you know, every research across many, many different scales, you know, from that we now know that atomic transitions, you know, from insulator and metal actually embody fractal patterns in the same way that clusters of galaxies embody fractal patterns. It's that scale of range of fractal patterns. And as, you know, you point out, our so-called man-made collective patterns show exactly the same fractal and holographic characteristics as do so-called natural phenomena. So, you know, we found that cities grow in the same way that galaxies form, that even the incidence and frequency and scale of conflicts follow the same so-called pattern laws, you know, so-called power laws, which are fractal and are holographic, as the incidence of earthquakes. So you're absolutely right. But what I was thinking when you were saying that, it's almost at the time when, before Benoit Mandelbrot, you look at clouds or you look at a coastline and there doesn't seem on the surface to be any patterning there at all. It took him to go into vast amounts of data that only computers could analyze and reveal these exquisite patterns beneath the apparent chaos or the apparent lack of patterning. There was patterning, there was order, there was patterning below what appeared to be on the surface as chaos. And even though the theory of that went back into mathematicians, you know, over the last couple of hundred years, it took Mandelbrot's computer analysis to reveal the reality of these underlying patterns. And we're now a couple of generations on, and now scientific evidence across all scales are not just revealing these patterns across the whole of so-called man-made and natural phenomena, but at a more profound level, realizing that information, the informational content of those fractals is reality itself, expressed as energy and matter and expressed a space and time.
Right.
So again, we're on this verge, this threshold of this even more profound realization, as you point out, of truly unity reality.
But let's not get too caught up in any static nature of patterns, even though it's very convincing and satisfying to say, oh, we're in this pattern. But we also have to really understand evolution, and that the patterns are constantly refining themselves. And so there's nothing stuck. And, you know, one of the problems I think we're having, at least in our country, with the present government is that they're stuck in patterns. They, you know, this guy who's helping the administration, he's one of Trump's top guys. He believes that we're in patterns that very soon we're coming to another major war, and so that's why they're building up the defense and getting ready to go to war, because he believes that we can't stop the patterns of war, and we're in one that's about to happen. And I don't believe that. I think that we're getting smarter, and the patterns, maybe there's conflict, but it won't necessarily be that it has to be the same kind of war that we've ever had before. So people who are stuck in patterns might be making plans for those patterns that don't have to exist the same way.
I completely agree with you. And when you study complex systems, when you study fractals, you appreciate that patterns are always dynamic. I mean, to give an example, the pattern, what's called the strange attractor that underlies the weather, is in the shape of a butterfly's wings. But when you map that patterning in non-physicalized space, in mathematical space, in intentional, conscious intentionality space, it's always changing. And yet it holds within boundaries, so that the overall pattern sort of looks familiar and resembles itself, but it's never the same. But the point is that when any pattern, when any dynamic pattern or attractor such as the weather gets to a point of unsustainability, it then has two choices. And this happens time and time and time again. It will either break down because it can't sustain itself, or it will break through to a higher level of awareness of complexity.
Yes.
And I think that's where we're at. And there is a there's a phenomenon called flickering.
We're going to have to close up the show, though, because it's getting late now, finally. And I would love to go on. I would love to do another show with you. There's so much in your book that we can talk about. And can we maybe plan another show soon?
For sure, as soon as you'd like. And if I can just finish, the point is that flickering between the old breaking down and the possible breaking through is the flickering of hope.
Good. What a way to talk about it. That's so great. Jude Kervin, the book is The Cosmic Hologram. You know, I'm so wonderful to talk with you. I just enjoyed reading your book tremendously. So I'm looking forward to talking with you again, and thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Oh, Peter, thank you, and thanks to all the listeners who've been listening to us. Thank you so much.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.fm. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. Thank you so much for listening.